Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. The last presidential debate between Barack Obama and John McCain is tonight, and we're conducting an America's exit poll. What was the exact moment you decided for one candidate or the other? Or perhaps you're still undecided. What questions do you still need answered at tonight's debate or between now and Election Day? Tell us your stories at 8778-MY-TAKE or drop us a note at mytake@thetakeaway.org. So Obama and McCain will sit down for their third and final debate. Do you think either candidate will change your mind? And what's the point of these debates that some are calling political theater at this point? Atlantic Monthly writer James Fallows joins us now with his thoughts, which you can also find in his recent article in the Atlantic Monthly, Rhetorical Questions, where he examined three decades of political debates. He comes to us from Beijing. Good evening, I should say, James.
Again, good morning back to you.
Right. How many hours of debates did you watch?
It seemed like one zillion, but it probably must have been between 60 and 70. There were more than 40 of these debates. Typically, they were 90 minutes long. I'm talking mainly about the primary debates this year. So it really took a long time to download them and streaming video here to China. But then I watched a lot of them.
And what struck you most in watching them in such a concentrated way?
Well, you know, concentrating this over the years, I once worked in presidential politics. I was Jimmy Carter's speechwriter long ago, back at the dawn of time. And I've been interested in debates since then. I've done stories for The Atlantic for the last couple of presidential cycles. This time, in focusing on the primary debates where we had the cast of thousands, what was interesting is the role that the moderators on cable TV got to play in sort of steering things in ways that made the politicians more or less like soap opera performers. But I guess the central truth about debates, which applies whether we're talking about the primaries or the ones, you know, starting back with Kennedy and Nixon, is yes, these are political theater, but in a good sense. The reason we watch them is it's the only opportunity to see candidates face to face. We can size them up against each other and see how they carry themselves and hold themselves and respond. And that usually ends up being what matters and has some kind of lasting political influence from the debates.
And you also talk about the role of the moderator. You just mentioned that. Let's listen to a clip of Wolf Blitzer from CNN.
I just want everybody to raise their hand and tell me if you agree that if the U.S. had intelligence that could take out Osama bin Laden and kill him, even though some innocent civilians would die in the process, would you, as president, authorize such an operation? If you would, raise your hand.
It would depend on how many innocent civilians.
Yeah, I mean, part of this is one of these hypotheticals, Wolf, that is very difficult to answer in the abstract.
Now, that would be from the Democratic candidate debate that was moderated by Wolf Blitzer. And what's your thought on that interaction?
What was interesting about that debate is that was probably 8 or 10 debates into the Democratic primary cycle this year. And by then, the Democrats had sort of gotten their back up about these raise-your-hand questions or yes-no questions or will-you-pledge-today questions or answer-in-10-seconds questions that had been featured by many of the moderators before that. When those questions were first introduced in the very initial Democratic debate back in April of last year by Brian Williams of NBC, people sort of meekly complied. Yes, I'll raise my hand if I have a gun. No, I won't put my hand up if I disagree with the global war on terror. But it shows the way in which it shows the bad side of debates, where they're made to have the candidates perform stunts on the issues. I think we're seeing, sometimes tedious as it is, the better side during the last couple we've seen between McCain and Obama, the one that'll happen in 12 hours or so, because they talk about the questions have to be more substantive, and it's mainly, as I was saying earlier, the carriage of the candidates, the way they respond to follow-ups that seems to be what we judge them on.
Well, James Fallows, this is Todd Zwillick from Capital News Connection. I'm curious, because as we look at tonight's debate, and everybody throws that word game changer around for John McCain since he's behind in the polls, can you get a game changer out of a debate? Is there such a thing as winning for him, or is there only an opportunity to make mistakes?
I think they're interesting and separable questions. Certainly there are such things as game changers through the long history of debates. There are some academic studies, which I will acknowledge, which argue that actually you can't find a huge statistical variance in election results based on debates. But certainly it seems, looking at the history of things, there are ways in which the performance in debates either usually makes some difference in confirming what people already suspected, good or bad, about a presidential candidate. And I think the litany I would give is that in 1960, John Kennedy went up against Richard Nixon. The question was, is Kennedy this young kid? Is he prepared to stand up with Nixon? And Kennedy carried himself in a way that seemed to get him through that hurdle. Same with Reagan and the incumbent Jimmy Carter in 1980. Same with Bill Clinton and the incumbent senior George Bush in 1992. And I would argue the same for Barack Obama in the first two debates. He made himself seem plausible, just, you know, able to stand with a more familiar character. I think at this stage, with a final debate with less than 3 weeks to go for the election and apparently large lead, something really cataclysmic would have to happen on the debate stage or someplace else to make for Senator McCain to feel as if he'd had, you know, a real different, you know, effect. Barack Obama would have to say, you know, William Ayers is the father of my love child baby or something like that.
James, don't put any ideas on the table. Don't put it. Just very quickly, though, because sometimes there are 10 or 20 seconds that really are memorable to voters. Let's listen to Carter and Reagan in 1980.
These are the kind of elements of a national health insurance important to the American people. Governor Reagan, again, typically is against such a proposal.
Governor, there you go again.
Was that a game changer, quickly, James?
It does seem to be that in retrospect, just as I would argue Senator McCain this time not looking at Barack Obama in the first debate and calling him that one in the second debate crystallized something, an impression that's hard for McCain to deal with.
James Fallows, it's a great pleasure to have you on our show. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
James Fallows is a national correspondent for The Atlantic Monthly, and you can check out his latest article called Rhetorical Questions. Now we turn to Femi Okey. He's got a few headlines for us. Femi?
Thank you very much. Just coming up to 20 minutes to the top of the hour.